Hi, this is World Socialist Radio. My name's Paddy, and I'm going to talk about dark factors and dodgy populists. With all the far-right demagogues and mad dictators and murderous wars in the news, people might be inclined to lean into their own confirmation bias and say, well, what do you expect? People are just evil. You can't make a silk purse or a functional liberal democracy, much less world socialism, out of a sow's ear. But a new Copenhagen study of nearly 2 million people across 183 countries, as well as all 50 US states, concludes that people are more likely to be nasty or, in the terminology, display aversive dark personality characteristics, such as selfishness or spitefulness, if they happen to live in prior aversive societal conditions, or ASC for short, which is to say, in quotes, societies characterized by corruption, inequality, poverty, and violence, end quote. Now, according to the research authors, there has been a lot of previous work on the various types of aversive behaviour. And they say, recent advances in personality research have provided strong evidence for the existence of a single disposition underlying all aversive traits. They define this disposition, which they call the dark factor of personality, or D for short, as the general tendency to maximise one's individual utility, disregarding, accepting, or malevolently provoking disutility for others, accompanied by beliefs that serve as justifications. So, according to them, D is the essence of aversive dark personality traits, such as narcissism, psychopathy, and sadism. So the study looked at data from multiple countries and states in combination with individual behavioural questionnaires. It found higher D levels in high ASC countries. In other words, in societies where rules are broken without consequences and where the conditions for many citizens are bad, such as Indonesia and Mexico, and interestingly, also Louisiana and Nevada. D was correspondingly lower in countries or states perceived to have better societal conditions, for example, Denmark and New Zealand, and US states like Utah and Vermont. They go on to discuss the various ways that this correlation reinforces itself through customs, daily practices, norms, situational affordances and demands, and state behaviour feedback loops that reinforce or discourage certain behaviours. So, okay, the society you grow up in is a strong influential factor on your character. Well, duh, you might say. Everyone knows that a badly treated dog is more likely to be savage and dangerous than a well-treated one. Even those hippie chimps, bonobos, have been known to turn violent when confined in zoos. But from a socialist perspective, this study is worth noting. Last month's Socialist Standard, in May 2025, dealt with that favourite go-to of the anti-socialist, which is human nature, and the received wisdom that the human inner demon is only kept in check by authoritarian rule. If that were really true, socialism would be impossible. What the Copenhagen study shows is that humans have what it calls adaptive phenotypic plasticity, which is a fancy way of saying that we model our behaviour on our social surroundings. So the correlation of high state-level corruption, inequality, poverty and violence with high individual levels of antisocial traits must be largely causative too. Individuals wouldn't be antisocial if the society they live in wasn't also antisocial. But even so, Couldn't the causation be the other way round, i.e. that antisocial people make for an antisocial society? Well, this doesn't really seem likely, given that antisocial personality disorders are estimated to affect only around 1 to 4% of the population. Mind you, the capitalist rich elite are probably only 1 to 4% of the population, and they are a walking, talking antisocial disorder. None of this constitutes empirical proof, obviously. The problem with personal questionnaires is that one can't be certain how truthful the respondents are being. Are people in nasty cultures generally more prone to being nasty? Or are they simply less inhibited about admitting it, compared to nice cultures where such behaviour is presumably frowned upon and thus potentially more covert? This is the same subjectivity problem that plagues Happiness Index and many other such lists. A 2016 list of the 63 most and least empathetic countries, based on the same kind of personal questionnaires, revealed that Ecuador was the most empathetic and Lithuania the least. Well, this is bafflingly counterintuitive. Ecuador has experienced years of iron fist authoritarianism and high levels of drug-related gang violence. Lithuania, on the other hand, has low crime, affordable living costs, and a high standard of healthcare. Even stranger is the fact that Saudi Arabia, notorious for public executions and judicial maimings, well, that scores second place after Ecuador. And the United Arab Emirates, well, that's another authoritarian monarchy with no democracy and little press freedom, that scores fifth. Now, you might attempt a sort of intellectual contortion at this point by suggesting that workers in violent or repressive states are somehow more likely to stick together, more likely to be empathetic. Well, the trouble with that argument is that Denmark is once again near the top at number 4, sandwiched right in between Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and that is pretty hard to explain. Meanwhile, Denmark's not wildly dissimilar neighbours, Sweden, Norway and Finland, wallow deep down in the low 40s and 50s, along with sad old unempathetic UK. So, that's what you get with personal questionnaires. Can one really learn anything useful from such studies? Well, maybe more encouraging for socialists and others is a recent Basel study which looked at 30 years of data from 26 European countries to determine the stability or otherwise of populist governments or those including a significant populist element. They focused on governments whose term of office ended prematurely. And they interpreted this, not unreasonably, as a sign of instability. The study found that cabinets with populist parties break up more often and sooner, regardless of the type of coalition. And they also found that the probability of early government dissolution is about 60% to 65% higher for alliances involving populist parties than for those without. Now, this wasn't about the specific left or right wing ideologies. It was about how populists tend to operate. They have a strong centralized leadership, they have very little internal democracy, and they tend to adopt radical and uncompromising positions that no other groups can work with. The researchers said that populism proved to be a constant indicator of government breakdown throughout the study period, irrespective of other influencing factors such as economic crises. So, to sum up, there is evidence that a pro-social society like socialism fosters pro-social behaviour, and that populist governments tend to collapse. Take that, Nigel Farage. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another instalment.
You've been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. To find out more and to take out a free trial subscription to the Socialist Standard, visit spgb.net/podcast.